Okay, so here we go. This is the last, eighth and last segment of text that we're going to be doing when it comes to when it comes to this section in Tanakh, which is the relentless pursuit, Shaul chasing David. This really ends this whole section. It ends it by the fact that David HaMelech now actually closes the game by his actions in this perek. So here we go. It's a very short parak, really not a lot of text, but a lot to think about when it comes to it. So remember, David HaMelech has now encountered Shaul twice in close quarters. He's on the one account cut his robe. On the other hand, he really snuck into the camp, took his spear, took his tzinnes amayim, and escaped. And in both cases, Shaul HaMelech very nobly seemed to say, "David, you're my son. I'm not going to hurt you. I want you." And unfortunately, certainly in the first case, Shaul HaMelech was not to be trusted. Even though he said that, he did not come through and he carried on chasing David. David HaMelech now is left in a very difficult situation. Because Shaul has once again reached out and said, "I'm not going to hurt you." But can David trust him or not? Can David say, "Well, this time he really does mean it"? Or are we beyond trust? That's the question that we have to think about in David's mind. Everybody has a text of this? Okay, so if anybody needs an extra one, there's a couple texts over here. So here we go. What we're going to do is we're going to do the psukim again. It's not an incredibly long parak, but there's a lot to think about. So section number one is pasuk aleph to pasuk dalet. Here we go. Vayomer David el liboy. So David says to his heart. So David Melech is now talking to himself. This is, you can imagine, a soliloquy, probably on the top of a mountain, thinking to himself, "What do I do with this promise from Shaul? Is this genuine? Is it not genuine? Is he being deceptive? Is he being transparent?" Vayomer David el liboy. Ato esfo esofe yomechod biyad Shaul. I'm going to be caught in the hands of Shaul. Ein li tov. So again, very good, beginning of Perakov Zion, he says it is better that I run to the Philistines. Ein li tov ki imolate imolate eretz plishtim v'no ash mimeni Shaul levaksheni od b'chol gvul Yisrael v'nimnatati miyadai. And then Shaul will stop chasing me, and I will have finally escaped his clutches. David takes his 600 merry men and goes el Achish ben Ma'och Melech Gat. He goes to the area of Achish, who is the king of the city of Gat. And remember, in those days, you know that the kings were kings of like little fiefdoms around each city. So, although there's a general territory called the Philistines, there are many other kings besides Achish. Achish is not the only king, but he is certainly the king of that area and all the fields and surrounding serfs, likely. Vayeshev David im Achish begat, hu vanoshov ish uveso. So David and all his men are stay in Gat, them in their household. David ushe noshov achinam Yisraelis, Avigail eshes Navala Karmelis. David with his two wives. Vayugad li Shaul kivorach David Gat, veloy Yosef oed levakshom. When he hears this, he no longer goes to search after him. And that's the end. And that really ends the pursuit. This ends relentless pursuit is once David is no longer in the land of Israel. So there's a lot of things to think about when it comes to this particular section over here. You know, it's funny because what's really funny is that beforehand he didn't. Let's look at it from a few perspectives. Didn't Shaul just promise him that he's going to look after him? So what do you see from here? Right, so David's the bridge is burnt, right? There's no going back here, right? The way that the Malbim says it, I don't know if I put this in. Oh yeah, the Malbim says in Source 92. Look how he this is his calculation. Ato esofe yomecha biyashol kila b'chol yuma misrachesh nisa. Not every day do miracles happen. V'gam she'osim lo nes menachim lo eschiyosav. Even if a miracle happens, it'll detract from one's merits. Maybe he's now already used up his credits for nisim, or supernatural interventions, based on the previous two times that he was saved. Now remember, just think of one of the examples. There was a supernatural intervention. David HaMelech was just, you know, by the skin of his teeth saved. When do we see that? When was an instance where David HaMelech was really literally in the lion's jaw and then escaped? Oh, so there was one with Michal, right? She lets him out the back window. That was more of a natural intervention, but there was a supernatural intervention when he's caught on the top of a mountain. Shaul is surrounded the mountain in Perek, I think it was Chof Gimel. And literally a malach came and told Shaul that Plishtim are attacking, and Shaul then desisted now that's a supernatural intervention. And the way that Chazal usually relate to supernatural interventions is, on the one hand, they're good because they help you, but on the other hand, it's kind of like, you know, cashing in all your credits, you know, like, because you're asking Hashem to subvert nature on your behalf. So David says, I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I require another one of those. Meaning, I know that Shaul's not doesn't mean what he says. And because I know it doesn't mean what he says, I'm probably going to be caught in a corner again. If I'm caught in a corner, I don't want to be requesting that amount. Maybe I've reached the bottom of my bank account. It's interesting, by the way, just in terms of like personal reflection here, to think about how much... you know, like we often think, you know, the bank account will be all right. You know, if we don't check in so often, we know the spiritual bank account will probably have credits, right? David HaMelech is thinking that, you know, it's gone down into an overdraft. You know, that you have to imagine what we should be thinking. You know, David HaMelech had a lot of credit to his name. So anyway, nonetheless, this is David HaMelech's cheshbon. So the other interesting thing which we need to think about when it comes to over here is was David correct? Meaning, was this the right calculation in fleeing? Did he assume right? Is there any indication that Shaul really, really, truly meant to make peace with David in this psukim? Or do you have any indicators that David made the right decision from the way the Tanakh frames it? Okay, what does it say? What does it say? Meaning, and if, good. So Tanakh, what Tanakh is telling us is, because David fled to the Philistine territory, that's why Shaul is no longer chasing him. But if David were not to have fled to Philistine territory, Tanakh is implying to us that he would have carried on. So the Tanakh is, it's just sort of from a subtle reading of this, where we see that Tanakh is telling us David knew what he was talking about. David knew that Shaul was not to be trusted even after the second gesture of generosity. That's how far it goes. Okay, so this is just sort of like we're being pushed in that gentle direction to that David Melech is right. What is a little bit troubling about this whole business is, this is not the first time that David Melech has gone to the Philistines. And in fact, not just any Philistines, this is not the first time that David Melech went to Achish, the king of the Philistines. And the first time it didn't work out so well. Right? The first time he went there, what happened was, is they said, his courtiers said to him, "Whoa, is this not the person who they said Hikar Shaul ba'alafav v'dovav b'rivavoyasav? Wasn't this the person who killed Goliath?" And they were about to kill him. What happened? David Melech played the fool, right? He played as if he'd lost his mind, and he was kicked out. And Achish had said at the time, "You know, I have too many meshugaim in my kingdom, and why are you bringing me more?" And that's why he kicked him out. So it would seem very strange that David HaMelech would walk straight back into that trap if he just narrowly escaped from the east, right? Isn't it? It would be strange that David HaMelech would pull off this stunt twice, which is what leads some of the Mefarshim to say. So there's a later Mefarshim on Tanakh called the Klei Yakar, not the Klei Yakar on the Torah, but the Klei Yakar who says that maybe it's a different Achish. I mean, this is Achish ben Ma'och, the son of God. Now it happens to be. It is interesting because it's the same city and it's a very similar time frame. So, you know, but nonetheless, what he's struggling with is saying it's not possible that David Melech is going to walk down the same path twice. Yes, Barbara.
Wasn't he more or less alone the first time?
Okay, so some of the other differences. So some of the other differences which exist, so the Mefarshim struggle with this. And one of the things the Mefarshim suggests, take a look in Source 93, this is the Radak. Rav David Kemchi, he says exactly right on that, along those lines. He says, Yesh Lish Ol, after the emboldened section on Source 93, Hayach Holach, how could he have gone? V'hu ayah kvar b'sakana imoy ad shehis olel v'nimlat misham. He was in terrible danger before going here, right? V'yesh l'forash ki b'pam ahi, ha'yadavid levadav v'hisna kersham, u'kesherosh yikiru pachad. meaning then he snuck in and was recognized, and they thought he was a spy, they thought he was coming to take out the territory. So now he comes with a whole entourage, he comes with his soldiers, he sends a message to Achish that I'm coming, and I've had our broken ranks of Shaul, Ruva Amoy, Vimyirza Yoshov Imoy, Ruva Anoshov. And if you want, I'll stay with you. Right? So they made it a whole public affair. Right? The Azraeli Lachim Yisrael, Vaidya Atzmoy, Kihu David, Vachish Kibla Bisholom Yoshov Imoy. So now he's very transparent. Shaul's kicked me out. Here I am with my soldiers. I'm coming in. You can host me or not. So David HaMelech wasn't taking the low road. He was taking the high road. And Achish met with him and realized that he meant business. Meaning, if David HaMelech looks like he's coming in subterfuge, then he's going to be less trustworthy than if he comes in a state of strength. That's interesting. You wonder also, by the way, if this is the transformation in David himself, right? We talked about this a little bit like last time, is that somehow a number of the events repeat themselves. So like, for instance, the fact that he had an opportunity to kill Shaul was repeated. The fact that the Ziphim betrayed him was repeated. The fact that he went to Achish, the king of Gat, was repeated. All those three incidents were all repeated in the same sequence, yet they were played out differently because the hinge of the middle part was the story of Naval, right, where David sort of realizes who he is and what his worth is, and nobody's going to now throw him out into the doormat. And so all those same events are transformed as they are repeated, and one of them, and the last one, is this capstone event of going to Achish. David HaMelech knows who he is now. He's not pretending to be anybody else. He's not spying. He walks in. You want me? That's great. You don't want me? I'll go somewhere else. And Achish, interestingly enough, respects that decision. So we see a very different David. We see a very different reaction with Achish. If you want to take a look on the second page for just a moment, just to see the map over here, it's interesting to see how this works. It's a little confusing here, just with all the different places. But you'll see that in the top left area, there's a star in circle, and that's called David going to the king of Gat. So Gat is in the coastal plain. It's pretty central Israel today, where Gat is. Remember, the Philistines controlled the coastal territories. That's where they came from. They were seer-fearing people. They were chariot-bound, so they did not enter the mountains as much. What was that?
The same with
Gat. I don't know if it's the same Gat. I would imagine so. But I'm not familiar exactly right now. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on this map, because remember, we're just a little left of this, the Dead Sea, so it might be lower down. I think so. But you can see over here, if you go down, just notice on the bottom left is Ziklag or Tziklag. That's what we're going to be focusing on. That's where David HaMelech is going to now end up. So let's take a look at the continuing psukim to appreciate that. So here we go. Let's return back here. So now David HaMelech is in this place. He's safe from Shaul. Shaul is not going to venture into Philistine territory to go and to get David. So here we go. In Pasuk Hei Tuvav, Vayom David Ola Achish, Im no matzah sichem be'enecho, yitnu li makom ba'achasas orei asadeh, v'eish roshom. He says, if it's all right with you, let me find a village along the fields. V'loma yeshev adocha bi'ir ha'mamlocha b'imoch. I don't want to trouble you. I don't want to bother you being in your palatial city. Vayitain lo Achish b'yom ahu es tziklag lochein ha'is ha'tziklag l'chmachi Yehuda adem hazeh. Okay, so he gets a city called Ziklag, and that's it's going to be till today. It is interesting that Ziklag is pretty far away from Gat. Okay, so I don't know how far Gat's territory or Achish's territory or realm of control is, but nonetheless, it seems like he's really putting him at an arm's distance. Whether that's because of distrust or whether that's just because that's the opportune place to put him. Now, what David does is David takes an incredible risk now, and that is that David doesn't just sort of sit back into his retirement village and kind of wait for everything to work out. David HaMelech now starts a very active career. Here's what happens. The amount of time that he stayed there was days and 4 months. By the way, there's a debate in the Mefarshim what that means. Does that mean 4 months and 2 days? Or does the word yamim sometimes as it means can also mean years? So it was years and 4 months. But whichever way, because the Mefarshim have different ways of debating as to how this fits into the time frame of everything else. But nonetheless, if we're going to the side that it's 4 months and 2 days, who's counting days? When do you count days? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, why is that so important? Why do you need to know the days if it really was days? If I'm counting days, what does that tell you?
You're eager to get there.
I'm eager to get out.
Oh,
right, meaning say like you know like when you get into like Pesach time, you know, and the kids are saying, you know, 33 more days of school, you know, so you know, at that point in time they want out. So it's clearly giving you a psychological perspective of David HaMelech's like, you know, relationship to this time. It was not a pleasant time. Okay, with that framework, Vayal David v'anasho v'yifshutu es ha-geshuri v'es ha-grizi v'amaleki, David HaMelech went and stripped these nations near him, the Geshuri, the Grizi, and the Amalekites. They were all southern nations. These were long time inhabitants of the land, right? From Shur, from the area of Shur, all the way down to Mitzrayim. So we're talking about Sinai Peninsula downwards, right? So a large swath of land. When David HaMelech conquered, he didn't allow anybody to live. And what he'd do is he'd kill everybody, and he'd bring back all the material and bring it back to Achish. And like, you know, as a gift. So where did you go today, David? The south of Israel and the area of these Yerachmeeli Jews and the Keni who were actually the children of Yisrael originally, they weren't Jewish, but they were allies to the nation of Israel. And David never allowed anybody to live, so that nobody could ever, you know, as David had a very simple philosophy, which is dead men tell no tales. So if you don't want any public media coverage, what you do is you just wipe out the media coverage, and that usually ends the story. And Achish believed David saying, Havesh hivish va'amo yis v'Yisrael v'haya li le'eved olam. Oh, David is such a... Look at this. David has really, like, you know, rejected his nation, and he's going to be my eternal servant. So what Achish is seeing is not only was David rejected by Shaul, but David is so angry with his people who rejected him that he's now... Look what he does. He goes to this extent where he goes and he removes them. You know, and he goes and fights against them on my behalf, and he brings me back all this great stuff, all these goodies. So, like, he really feels like David HaMelech is his ally, or more accurately, his eved, right? Because he feels that David is indebted to him. Barbara.
This is a geographical question. Amalek is in the Israeli territory?
Amalek is in the south of Israel.
So it's not part of Israel?
Well, they're encroached at certain points, but yeah, it's below the Ereshev area. Okay. Yeah. Always the southern nation.
When they came out of Mitzrayim, one of the things that was against
the
Amalek was that they had no reason to attack Israel
because
they weren't in any of the land that Israel was supposed to take.
Yeah, well, it's south of Israel, south of Israel, yeah. But nonetheless, now just a few things to think about over here. And that is, number one is, like, who is he killing? Who are these people? Like, what is going on over here? Why is he doing this? So a lot of the Mepharshim suggest that, yeah, you know, these were in fact allies of the Philistines, which is why he needed to kill everybody to silence them. And that's what David HaMelech did. He kind of was like, you know, slowly doing, you know, just cleaning up the countryside. And he had to make sure that Gad wasn't aware of this, that Achish wasn't aware of this, which is a little bit strange. You know, what the Abai Ranel points out is, like, that's just not very good, you know, guest conduct. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you come to somebody else's house and starts getting rid of their pets, you know, or like whatever it is. Like, it's like, it's not like, you know, have deal, but like, it's just not your, like, you're not a very, this, look what that Barbara Nelson says on top of page 40, or on top of page, on the bottom of the page over here. He says, V'adavor hazeh zar etzli ma'od. It seems so strange to me, says that Barbara Nelson, the very bottom of the writing page. Levi shehu begida rabba l'david l'hakos anshe ha'aretz l'havi shesreicho emohem. Why would David jeopardize his standing in the land by killing people who are allied to the people who are his hosts? It doesn't make sense he's killing Philistines or Philistine affiliates. He feels that morally, David could never do this. How could David pay back bad for good. When Achish had really welcomed him in at great jeopardy to himself, as we'll see in the next parak. And if you're to do this many times, and it sounds like he perpetuated raids on a daily basis. So, you know, you do this a lot of times. You know how it is. You can't get rid of all of them. Right? You mean to say that you're going to have 4 months of consistent raiding and no one survives to come over and, you know, crawl across the desert and collapse at the foot of Gat and tell Achish what's happening to them? V'ukvar bilti efshari, it's impossible. Gam shimisem kulam eich Achish v'anashav loimatzu artosam shumamava areim surufos eish v'zarim ochlim oso. Like, you know, he sends out his tax delegation, the postal service goes to the particular city and there's no longer a city, there's a crater. So what happened to them? There might not be people left, but there's a crater left. So what are you going to, how do you explain that? So he says, "Ve'ech lo hayu chokrim mi asa davar ha'ra'aze, ve'ech hayav shari shelo yisvada ha'davar b'yos shenasa pamim rabos." He's like, a national investigation will be opened, and an inquiry will be set up, and it's very hard to assume that, you're going to be able to point in different directions. David HaMelech is raiding, these people are killed, their cities are looted. I happen to have the insignia of the city sitting on my throne now because it was given to me by David. Two and two, you add up to four. Vanire Eli, says Abarbanel. In logic, it would make sense to me. Shayu ha'umas ha'ele g'shuriv g'rizu ha'amaleki sunu'ei nefesh achish. Shem ha'yu oivav. He says, no, they were in attrition to Achish. They were the enemies of the Philistines. V'lachein haya David ma'ke b'dam yisholel v'shololam v'lo haya ze b'gidol Achish v'lo ilamo. In fact, this was facilitating Achish's colonialist expansion. V'lachein lahaya Achish v'anashav haya chokrim olav v'lo haya ish mi'agoyim ha'ele tzo'ek elav al ra'asai. And that's why nobody is coming to Achish, because why are you crying to Achish? He's your enemy. So what David HaMelech was doing was he was strategically making himself more indebted to Achish by capitalizing on Achish's enemies. That's the way that Abarbanel reads this. He actually goes on further and he says that lo yachaya ish, the idea that he didn't live a soul means to say that he didn't take captors. Not that he killed everybody, but he didn't take captors. But it wasn't necessary for him to murder everybody because who are they going to complain to, right? Achish couldn't be bothered with this. So the Abarbanel sort of rationally and morally tones down what David HaMelech is doing. However, not everybody agrees with that. Not everybody agrees with this. Because the Pashas HaPsukim seem to indicate that David HaMelech was wiping the table clean. How could David do this? Yeah.
Yeah, but you said yourself before that there were many kings, and therefore Achish and his personality as we know it would be like, yeah, let me get bigger territory, let me be the bigger king among my own people even.
Oh, that's so true.
It could still be other...
That's interesting.
He's
up
for himself no matter what.
That's true. Yeah, listen, we have to think about the... It's an intriguing thing to think about is like the loyalties of Achish apropos the other Philistines. We're going to explore that a little bit when we get to the next section. The next parak, in parak Chof Ches, which is not part of this series, but that's really the closing section of Shmuel Aleph. When we get to that, we're going to see that Achish does break ranks with the rest of the Philistines. So how far it goes, you could play with that. What is an intriguing suggestion, which is completely radical and very, very different to all this supposition right over here, is what the Malbim says. The Malbim says something which is just remarkable. Take a look at the very bottom left of the page, 95. He says they lived in this country me'olam, means forever, right? These were the natural inhabitants, right? Mimos Yoshua, from the times of Yoshua. Wow. So in fact they were of the seven nations who were liable to be wiped out totally. Which means, let's just sort of paradigm shift what the Malbim is saying over here, is what is David HaMelech really doing? David HaMelech is performing the job of Yehoshua, and really as what Shaul should have been doing. So here you have this unusual situation, as Malbim points out. Here he is, a king in exile, who's performing the work of the king who sits on the throne. Shaul was spending all his time going to wipe out David, and here's David, who's now in exile, doing what Shaul should have been doing from the outside. So why was he killing everybody? It wasn't because David HaMelech was so much concerned about not getting the message out. That was true as well, but it was more about the fact that this was the way to conquer the land. Now, just to be fair on this, there is a halacha that's what's called Shoel B'Shlomam, that you ask their peace. According to most of the Mefarshim, it is a debate, but according to most of the Mefarshim, when Israel would approach a city, they wouldn't just destroy it and burn it down. They would ask them if they wanted to make peace. If they made peace, there were stipulations. There was servitude, tax, a whole bunch of things that they needed to sign here about. What the Mefarshim sort of debate over here is they're saying, well, if it was they were among the seven nations as well, like the Malbim is tendering, it would mean that he asked them for peace. Those who said freedom, they were killed. And the people who said no, we were prepared to, he killed anyway because he didn't want them to come back to Achish. So there are two sets of reasons why he was killing people, which ended up in a zero sort of sum. But in the end of the day, it was for two separate reasons, which is what the Tanakh is emphasizing here, Barbara.
It contradicts the Arabic now, though, because
good. We're not
they,
correct.
If,
we're
if
we're
Achish
not.
Would know, no, but then.
Correct.
Go by his. If Achish would know what happened, and David lied to him, saying, "Oh, I was doing it to Jewish people."
Correct.
Why would Achish trust him then?
Okay, that's true. So according to the Malbim, he was taking more of a risk, but they were external nations. The two can really live together. Meaning, these are clearly external nations to the Philistines. That's what the Malbim also seems to be saying. The Philistines are not one of the seven nations, and whether Achish had peace with them or not is we could say like the Abarbanel, he didn't care about them, they were his enemies and he was killing them, but he was less likely to be worried about them, whichever way it is. But I think the Malbim is just adding in another reason why David HaMelech was doing this as opposed to just expanding Achish's territory. Now, yes,
it's also interesting if you think of it that way, that it sort of gives it makes sense when you're saying that he was there for 4 months and days, that you were saying that when you think about days, you're thinking about something that's going to happen. So it's like David was looking over his shoulder he wouldn't get caught or found out.
Right, so you're saying David was really under threat. I agree with you, and that's the only thing is, the funny thing is, Autumn, he kind of brought it upon himself, if that's the way he's living, so but nonetheless, he obviously feels this is very important, and David HaMelech, the way I see this is that David HaMelech has this unstoppable passion and urge to act like a king, even though he's not yet king, right? And you see him taking these king-like actions, even in exile, he's taking risks for this. It's a very, very fascinating outcome of this. So just a few things to think about, like, overall picture over here, and that is that we do actually have a very interesting history of people who are from the nation of Israel who interacted with the Philistines in the Gaza area, on the coastal plain area. Starting with, in fact, Avram Avinu himself. Avram Avinu went to the land of Gerar. The king's name was Avimelech. Actually, Avimelech is sort of a king name. So like Pharaoh is Pharaoh, any Pharaoh was a Pharaoh. Avimelech was the Philistine name for a king. So he went to Avimelech, and the first time Avimelech, abducted Sarah. And then he gave back Sarah. Remember, he was plagued. Then there was a time with the wells that had this issue. And then there was this time when Avram Avinu, Avimelech and Fichol come to him and said, let's make a deal. They made this deal, and he took these seven lambs, and made a deal, which was in a place which ended up being called Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is based on the covenant that Avram Avinu had with Avimelech. This is in Parashas Vayera, which he made a covenant between him, Eli Ulanini Ulanechti, Kacheser Asher Asisa, right? He makes us this covenant, intergenerational covenant with Avimelech, not to encroach upon one another. Of course, Avimelech needs Avraham more in that case because he sees Avraham is successful, and that's where he comes to Avraham Avinu. We see later on, Yitzchak Avinu comes back to the area of Gerar. He can't leave the land of Israel, so he goes to the coastal plain. Again, he also pretends that Rivka is his sister. Avimelech finds out that it's not the case. Then there's a lot of fights about the wells, which go on with Yitzhak. So again, we have that. Later on, Shimshon as well also goes down to the Philistines, marries a Philistine girl from Timnah. And later on, all the complications, Delilah, all the complications are sort of like you come to the Philistines, sometimes you make a covenant, sometimes you don't make a covenant. It is interesting that the Chazal do put a strong emphasis on the fact that Avraham Avinu originally was castigated for his interactions with Avimelech. Meaning, Avimelech came and said, "Oh, Avraham, we're all Semites, we're all friends, brothers, and let's make a deal." So did Avraham Avinu need to make a deal? Answer is no. Sometimes you make a deal because of security. Hashem says, you need security, I'll give you security. Right? And moreover, Avraham even made an intergenerational deal with a person whose land would ultimately be the land that he would have to conquer in the first place. So there's an unbelievable medrash. The Yalkut Shimoni says that because Avraham Avinu made a covenant with seven lambs, you know what's going to happen? Well, in the future, there's going to be 7 months where the Aaron is going to be exiled in the land of the Philistines because of that. And the medrash says, and you know what? It's going to also be that seven of your children are going to kill by the Philistines. And it goes through Shimshon and Shaul and goes through all the children of Israel, Avraham Avinu, who are going to be murdered by the Philistines. Why? Because you thought you were getting security from them. And then there's numerous tiers of where the sevens reappear, and Avraham Avinu is punished in the seven bottom. Mishkan, Beis Hamikdash, of course, that's more homiletical because the Philistines didn't destroy and destroy the Mishkan. But nonetheless, the Midrash is pretty clear that it was a punishment. In fact, Ad Kedei Kach, just so we should appreciate this, the Rashbam says that Rabbi Shmuel, the grandson of Rashi, says that the reason why the Akedah is immediately after the covenant made between Avimelech and Avram is because the Akedah was a direct punishment for Avram Avinu making a covenant. Oh, you think you're getting security for your children by making a covenant with your neighbor? Well, let me tell you about your child. Take him right up onto that mountain and kill him. Right, so that's the way that Rashbam reads it, which is like a shocking way of reading the whole thing. I just want to catch the momentum here. Meaning to say, it's a whole different way of looking at this. In fact, the Midrash Mechilta, just putting a lot of points out there, the Midrash Mechilta suggests, in Parshas B'Shalach, it says, B'Shalach paras v'lenochom ered derech eretz plishtim ki karavu. Remember, to go to Gaza is the most natural area way to come up through from Egypt into the land of Canaan, right? That's where the border crossing is along the coastal plain, right? But loinochom ered derech eretz plishtim, I should not take them that way, why ki karavu, which means it's too close, it would be too short. The Midrash Mechilta says, what does it mean, ki karav? Ki karav shvu'asa shal osa azakein. That the shavua was too close, was too proximate of that sage, that old man. Meaning, Avram Avinu's covenant was still in place because it was intergenerational for a few generations. Which means that they couldn't go through the land of Philistines because they'd bound themselves with an intergenerational covenant with the Philistines. They couldn't get there. It goes on further. Even later on, we're going to see when David HaMelech tries to conquer the land, the area of Yerushalayim, there is this defense which is called the Ivrim and Pischim. What are the Ivrim and Pischim? It literally means the lame and blind. So what some of the Farshim suggest, the Radak brings later on, we'll see Master Shem, is who are the lame and the blind? There were these statues of a lame and a blind person. Who was blind? Yitzhak Avinu. Who was lame? Yaakov Avinu, because of his father of the Malach. What they did was they set up these statues to say, don't you remember, you made a three-generational covenant not to hurt us. Well, the grandson of that Avimelech is still around. Like, you know, you can imagine he was in a pretty late advanced stage and probably in an assisted living in Yerushalayim at the time. But nonetheless, I'm saying, like, he must have been a really old person by this time. But nonetheless, he's still alive. So the statute of limitation hasn't kicked in yet, which means that still you can't attack us. The Mepharshim argue that it's Jebusite territory. Wasn't the Yevusi of the land, but Yevusi as a outcome of the Philistines. So meaning to say, if we read Tanakh again and we read it with this perspective, there's this big dark background of the Philistines. You know, do you make covenants with them? Do you not make covenants with them? David HaMelech is challenged by the same thing right now. Just if we're thinking about this in the same terms, David HaMelech has a relationship to the Philistines is complex. On the one hand, his first relationship with the Philistine was to kill Goliath. Goliath was the Philistine, right? He killed Goliath. That was so. His one modus operandi towards the Philistines was obliterate, kill, right? You cursed the Mareches Elokim Chaim. I'm going to make you the food of the birds of the heaven, right? That's what I mean. On the other hand, when it comes to Achish over here, David HaMelech takes a more nuanced diplomatic perspective, right? It's deceitful, but it's still more on the diplomacy. What's happening now? Just think about this in terms of the background. Shaul HaMelech is preparing for war against the Philistines. David HaMelech is planning for diplomacy at the same time. Who's going to be more successful? David HaMelech is going to be successful in this way. Not like Shaul, who's planning for a war in which he's going to lose. The complexity of the relationship with the Philistines, it may even be, as we'll see later on, as we get there, that David HaMelech might be trying to wedge himself between the different Philistines. And maybe that he's trying to say, well, maybe let's deal with the Achishes of the world, not the Goliaths of the world. Meaning the rest of the Philistines, and the rest of their officers, are not to be dealt with, but maybe we can co-opt some of them, whether David HaMelech is thinking about further future relations, maybe or not, it doesn't seem to have worked out. But nevertheless, we see that David HaMelech has a greater perspective and plan at hand over here. So when David HaMelech goes over here, there's a much more complex relationship which is being bred over here, and we have to wonder to what degree is this going to be successful. With this, we end this particular section, which is the end of this pursuit. Shaul stops his pursuit, not because of his choice, but because of David's choice, ultimately, when David HaMelech puts a stop to it. What stands in front of us, Mitzvah Hashem, for coming for the next, is the last three parakim four parakim of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, which deal with the closing light of Shaul HaMelech's career. And with that, we'll wrap up Shmuel Aleph. Anyway, thank you very much, ladies. And this has been a great achievement. This is eight separate sections just to get to this. In the meantime, have a wonderful night.